May it please the court, counsel. The most critical question in this attorney disciplinary matter is whether we as a profession are going to allow dishonest lawyers to practice law in this state, especially in our court proceedings. This case involves three separate and distinct instances of dishonesty and lack of candor to a tribunal. The facts are not in dispute, and the applicable rule violations are not in dispute. But I would like to briefly mention the three incidents that are at the heart of this matter. The first involves a knowing and an intentional non-disclosure of facts surrounding compensation arrangements for the respondent's representation of a Chapter 11 debtor in bankruptcy. In bankruptcy, there are strict rules and procedures for disclosure of all professionals, especially including attorneys who seek to represent the Chapter 11 debtor. A bankruptcy judge in the Western District of Missouri that was presiding over the particular bankruptcy case called this the most blatant case of attorney non-disclosure he had seen in his nearly 25 years on the bench. The second instance of dishonesty and fraud involves the knowing submission of a false affidavit in connection with a pro hoc vice application in an out-of-state bankruptcy in the state of Louisiana. The facts of the false affidavit hit very close to home in this court because the affidavit set forth a statement that the respondent, Lydia Carson, had never been the subject of disciplinary proceedings. That affidavit was signed under oath in Jackson County, Missouri on March 19, 2013. 19 days earlier, respondent had received a certified mail letter from this court enclosing a written reprimand for a violation of Rule 4. The testimony at the hearing was that the reprimand was likely sitting on respondent's desk on the date she signed that affidavit. The third instance of dishonesty is the knowing failure to affirmatively report public discipline to the federal court system in the Western District of Missouri. Respondent has practiced in the Western District of Missouri federal courts for nearly 30 years, and she testified that she was well aware of the local rules requiring this affirmative disclosure of public discipline. She did not report the reprimand in 2013, the year it was received. She did not report it in 2014 or even in 2015. January of 2014 is an important month because in that month she received a letter from me asking her to submit proof of compliance with the federal court local rule. She did not submit that compliance, and she did not submit the affirmative disclosure to the federal court in response to that.
She said she thought her staff had done that, and that was not the case?
The panel found that her testimony on that was not credible, but yes, her position is she thought that she submitted it sometime in around March of 2013, along with her payment to this court of the cost associated with the reprimand. But receiving the letter did not cause her to go back to her file and take any remedial action. She did not report the reprimand to the federal court until January or February of 2016, which is after the information in this case was filed. The DHP recommended an indefinite suspension with no leave for reinstatement of at least 3 years. The chief counsel accepted that recommendation. The respondent rejected it. The primary issue is whether this is a disbarment or a suspension case. Respondent is asking for a reprimand or a state suspension with probation. Informant contends that respondent is a risk to the public and to the judiciary of the state. Perhaps the greater risk is to the integrity of the profession. If we allow dishonest individuals to practice laws in this state, even with some type of monitoring, our profession will fall into disrepute. Our rules, specifically Rule 5.225, do not permit our profession to fall into that type of disrepute. They also do not allow for probation in instances where the conduct could rise to the level of disbarment. Whether the type of offense, which is a Rule 4-3.3 offense, is disbarable is maybe an open question. The general rule cited in the Kriegel case is that the intentional deception of a tribunal is a disbarable offense. If there are mitigating circumstances or if there is more knowing than an intent to deceive, then suspension is appropriate. I will note in the Kriegel case, the respondent came within one vote of disbarment, and I believe that the evidence in this case would suggest that even if disbarment is not appropriate, it is still falls within the realm of a disbarable offense that would prevent the court from entering into a state suspension with probation.
What are the mitigators here?
Okay. Certainly, there was some personal emotional problems that the respondent was undergoing at the time of this conduct. Basically, in the year early to middle part of 2013, the respondent had had tragically gone through the bad health and ultimate death of her mother, and that was found to be a mitigating factor. And I believe that the DHP found that in and of itself didn't cause these violations. That could explain certain types of violations, but not the dishonest conduct. Another mitigating factor put forth by the disciplinary hearing panel was that ultimately the respondent did pay back or disgorge $26,000 in attorney's fees to the respective bankruptcy estates. So she did suffer other penalties and sanctions that is provided as a mitigator, although it was by forced disgorgement through a court order rather than a voluntary repayment. So those would be the mitigators that the panel found. I believe in the respondent's brief, she puts forth additional mitigating factors.
Were there prior disciplinary actions against her?
Yes, for sure there was the reprimand that was issued by this court in 2013. That was pursuant to a stipulation that I think was submitted to this court in January of 2013 and then issued in February. Prior to the reprimand, there had been a total of 4 admonitions for lower level violations, mostly diligence and communication. With respect to the aggravating factors, there are several, including the fact that respondent has substantial experience in the practice of law. She's practiced for 30 years, and a large portion of that has been in the area of bankruptcy law. I think that 30 years is sort of self-evident as substantial experience. The prior discipline is an aggravating factor. We have a pattern of misconduct that, although it takes place really during the course of 2013, there are very discrete points during that year when respondent took the path of some sort of either affirmative false statement to a tribunal or an intentional non-disclosure to the tribunal. You look at all the conduct, you add it up, and there is a pattern of misconduct with multiple offenses at each stage of these legal proceedings.
Does anything in the record explain why this suddenly occurred after the prior admonitions didn't have to do with dishonesty or anything?
No. There'd been no prior reports of this dishonest contact or conduct. It was brought to the chief counsel's attention by the bankruptcy judge involved, but it's not something that had been on the radar screen prior to that.
What sanctions has the bankruptcy court imposed on her?
Well, their sanction was in the form of a disgorgement. There were two bankruptcy courts involved, one in Missouri and one in Louisiana. The Missouri court ordered disgorgement of $16,000, and they converted that to a judgment. And that kind of came in two stages. There was an initial disgorgement and then a second supplemental disgorgement of total of $16,000. And then in the Louisiana court, really the same sort of disgorgement proceeding for failure to obtain proper court approval of her representation, and that was a $10,000 fee that was disgorged.
And they had not found that these violations warrant suspension from practice in bankruptcy court?
There's been no Western District of Missouri disciplinary proceedings that I'm aware of. And of course, she's not licensed in Louisiana, so there would be no ongoing disciplinary proceeding for that state as well.
Should that be a factor that we should consider, that the bankruptcy court did not feel the behavior warranted discipline?
Well, I don't believe so. I don't know what the bankruptcy court felt. They reported the situation to the counsel's chief disciplinary counsel's office in around 2013, and our hearing was in 2016. I don't know what they're looking at or doing as a result of this hearing, but they on their own have not initiated any disciplinary proceeding, but I don't have any inside information to what if anything they have done about it. I do know that the prior reprimand wasn't reported affirmatively until 2016, so I don't know what kind of file proceedings they have over there in Western District of Missouri.
Didn't the bankruptcy court in Missouri somewhat suggest, I can't remember reading what the quote was, but that I'm sending my findings and my order to the Missouri Bar to let them determine what appropriate sanction should be? I'm paraphrasing, but is that?
That's essentially correct. It was on the record at a hearing for the sanctions, and I believe that was Judge Fetterman's final words on the record, and that was the final sentence of his transcript. I see that I'm about out of time. Are there any other questions?
Thank you. I'll hear from you on the bubble.
May it please the court, counsel. I am Daniel F. Church. I'm very honored to be here. Also honored to represent Ms. Carson here before the court. I think there's a lot of issues at stake here, but needless to say, I'd like to talk a little bit about I think what happened in the time frame that occurred and some circumstances that affected some of the conduct that I believe that the panel took into account and would want this court to consider as well. Certainly, Ms. Carson has been practicing since 83. She maintains what's Carson Law Center. It is really practicing representing individuals in bankruptcy for individuals, traffic tickets, and uncontested divorces. So that's the type of practice that she maintains. And I think that's important because as it relates to the representation in this case, I think you'll hear Ms. Carson tell you something different. Would like to ask the court, would it be permissible for Ms. Carson to address the court for a few moments? Would that be okay?
That's your decision.
Okay, thank you. And so I'm going to try and cut myself off and give her a few minutes to visit with the court. And certainly the court ask her any questions. But I think you'll hear that she made one grand mistake, and that was getting involved in a Chapter 11 proceeding that she had no business. Complicated, three gentlemen who owned motels in eight states, 12 different companies. And she really was well beyond her capabilities and should never have done that. And I think you'll hear her tell you that. But the problem with that is that she was ill-equipped to do what she needed to do, and I think that the record speaks voluminously about that. I think when you really get to the facts of this case, if you really peel the onion back and look at it, you will find exactly what I'm talking about. And that is that she failed to promptly and appropriately report to the bankruptcy court about the payments that she received. She thought that she was in compliance because they were from third parties. the Louisiana corporate counsel for the entities told her, well, these are how we make payments. We make them from third parties, not the bankrupt entity. That should have been the first red flag right there of a significant nature. But Ms. Carson was not that equipped to deal with that and proceeded. She did file the bankruptcy on behalf of the entities in Kansas City, and that bankruptcy proceeded to a point where it was dismissed. She reported her first payment there, but there were subsequent payments she did not. Then in 2013, the same entity refiled. She filed the appropriate pleadings for the reorganization and did not reveal any payment in that instance. She also took on the representation of them in Louisiana under a pro hoc HA, and I'll address that in a moment, but she was certainly ill-equipped to do that, but thought she was going to be involved in just assisting in a reorg and really not having to appear in Louisiana. So there were a lot of issues that occurred.
CHP found basically not that she just failed to report, but that she falsely reported that she hadn't received payment.
I think that's correct. And I will tell you that we're not here disputing the violation. That is not at all what I'm here to suggest to you. I want to talk to you more about what is appropriate discipline for an attorney who has done what she did, because I think that's the critical issue before us today. And I think I agree with Kevin and his comment. That's exactly what we need to talk about, because she violated a variety of rules. There is no question that she did, and she admitted it, and we readily admit that as well. I think that it is apparent that she did fail to disclose those payments from third parties and should have under the rules. And she also submitted an affidavit to the court in Louisiana that frankly didn't comply with the requirements for a motion for admission pro hoc. And she erred in doing that as well. And she will tell you that she didn't report to the court that she had this admonition, and she should have. And she does not dispute that as well.
You mean the reprimand?
Correct. Excuse me. The reprimand. Thank you, Judge. And so I think that those are clearly questions that are obvious that occurred. What's really important to talk about, I think, here is what is appropriate. And certainly, counsel mentioned for the informant that there's different levels of consideration. And one level under the ABA standards is whether the conduct merits a disbarment. And disbarment is an abhorrent conduct that renders a lawyer really not fit to practice, should not appear before any tribunal, shouldn't represent the public for any reason, such as like Ms. Gwen Karen Keeney in her case that's cited. Ms. Karen Keeney was abhorrent to the court. She disliked and was horrible to the judge, the lawyers. She used forged documents. She made facts up that she had no basis. I was personally familiar with her, and she was not fit to practice. This is not this case. The second test, then, is a second characterization under 612 is, did she knowingly do something? And the third one is, was she negligent? And frankly, I think, to be honest with this court, she falls somewhere in between knowingly and negligent. And the reason I'm going to tell you that is when we come back and look at what happened. During the time period in question, 2013 is really the critical time period where she really made these errors. And she did have a traumatic event, and her mother died in February, and her mother was buried in February. And Ms. Carson had been treated for a long period of time for depression. And she's ongoing treatment for that, and it's in the record in the panel. And I think these were issues that were really compelling as it relates to whether she was doing the things she needed to do. And the reason that it's important is Judge Fetterman told her in a show cause order to appear and respond to questions he had. She didn't respond. She didn't file a response to a show cause order. She appeared. When he told her that she had failed to disclose things, she was horrified that Judge Fetterman thought that she had intentionally conducted herself in a fashion to deceive the court. She subsequently filed a pleading with the court to let the court know that here's what I've done, here's the payments I've received. And Judge Fetterman, in response to that, did say that he did not think that she intentionally deceived the court. And I think that was another compelling piece of evidence in his July 10th order, that that's what he found. So the question is...
Is that inconsistent with what the DHP found?
I'm sorry?
Is that inconsistent with the DHP finding she made false reports?
No, I don't think so. I think that... It's different when we talk about intentional deception and falsely reporting. And I think falsely, you can falsely report something by you don't intend to deceive, you just may be wrong about it. And you should, and I think it was more a fact that she should have known, to be honest with you. I think she should have known what the rules provided and she didn't know. So I think we need to be mindful of what her mental state was and how that impacted her. I think some of the mitigating factors are critical. And I think her mental state is a critical factor. I think her character evidence that was presented by three attorneys, that she'd never committed a dishonest act like this before. She's never committed anything like this since she's been practicing since this. She had not done anything like this in the prior 30 years. The prior disciplinary matters did not were not consistent with this type of conduct. So this is really... really an anomaly, and it really relates to the fact that she was outside of what where she was where she should be. I think the court found that she was remorseful, that she felt bad about it.
What about her failure to report the reprimand to the Western District Bankruptcy Court for 3 years?
That is unacceptable. I think she had a duty to report that, and I think that's a clear violation.
But that occurred outside of this period when she was
absolutely traumatized. And I think the only explanation someone mentioned here on the panel, maybe in a prior question, is that she had thought that her staff had done it, and she did. They had not, and that's not. And she will tell you that's not an excuse. The buck stops in her office, not with her staff, and she had a duty to do that. There's no question about that. But I think the other issues are that the panel found that was critical was there's no injury to any party, that she had paid a penalty, that she had already been disgorged $26,000, that those things were important. And I actually think that the aggravating factor of prior experience is totally wrong. Actually, I think it's a mitigating factor because she didn't have any prior experience in handling complex Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings with the type of business people she was dealing with. And I think that is important because I think that's a mitigating factor because she truly lacked the experience she needed to do this. And I think that's why a probationary plan is particularly helpful or would be work under these circumstances. I think that when you get down to the bottom of it, there really is not a pattern here. It was all one client. It was all a bankruptcy or these two bankruptcies, but it was all the same thing that she did. It wasn't really a pattern of the constant conduct. It was an instance where she failed in this particular circumstance to do what she needed to do. So I think that's critical. I want to talk about the probation plan. I have one here. I modified, we attached one to the brief, but I've identified a person that is a prospective monitoring counsel. It's Joanne Stutz. She is a practicing attorney, a bankruptcy attorney in Kansas City. I've known Joanne for 30 years. She'd been practicing for 37 years. She splits time about 50-50 between Missouri and Kansas, does Chapter 11s, and she would be meeting with Ms. Carson monthly to review her filings, her records, how she's handling it, and could report to the disciplinary administrators or to the OCDC on a quarterly basis, and that she could review any records that she needed to review. We believe she'd be well qualified. We think probation makes sense here because, number one, under the Coleman case. Probation is appropriate if there's no harm to the public likely by her ongoing conduct or past. And there really wasn't any harm to the public. Is her future practice going to cause disrepute to the court? I think she's learned her lesson. I think that through probation, you will never see that happen. She's practiced now for a number of years since this incident, and nothing like that has occurred. Will she be adequately supervised? Little question of that. I think clearly so. And lastly, is her conduct one that really suggests disbarment? I think really it is not. She didn't intentionally do that, and I think that was what the panel found to be most compelling. And so what we would request you to consider relative to appropriate discipline for her is a 3-year suspension, staying that suspension and allowing her to continue to practice. I think that's the type of thing that we'd like to do for lawyers, is keep them in practice if we can. If we can monitor them and make them appropriate practitioners before the court representing the public, then that's what the service that we need to provide. And we would request that this court consider that, because we think it's an opportunity that she could show that she is fit and she's capable of doing the right thing that she's done for 30 years, and that this was an instance where she didn't belong, and she would not be back handling those type of matters before the bankruptcy court or any other court. I'm going to let her, Ms. Carson, speak to your honors. I'd be glad to field any questions if you have. Thank you very much.
May it please the court. My name is Lydia Carson. I've practiced for about 33 years in Kansas City. Do a lot of bankruptcies. It is a tangible help that you don't get in a lot of other courts. It is remarkable how heavy a financial burden can be on families. It is remarkable of how they feel the relief once they filed. It is absolutely my favorite practice. What I haven't done is Chapter 11s historically, and this one got over my head real fast. It was a mistake to take the case. It was a mistake not to withdraw when I should have. I did not intend to be misleading. I did not intend to be deceitful. I didn't file documents timely. The documents I did file didn't get enough attention, and I did not file the reprimand with the Western District Missouri Court. Those are all my duties. I failed my duty to the court. I had practiced in front of Judge Fetterman for decades, between him being a trustee and being a judge, and he is just one of those guys that I just admire and respect and trust, and I made his job a whole lot harder. I am truly sorry for what I did, and I would like a chance to go back to what I do best, which is bankruptcies, Chapter 7s and 13s. I think I've got it. Chapter 11s are more than I can handle. I want to take my responsibility, and I would just ask for a chance.
Thank you. Any questions? We're from your rebuttal.
Thank you. Just a couple of points. It may be the case that the respondent, Ms. Carson, got in over her head on this Chapter 11 bankruptcy, but I think it's important to look at one of the documents that she signed and submitted to the bankruptcy court, which said, in connection with her request to be employed for the debtor, it said, "Respondent has the experience in matters of this character and is well qualified to act as an attorney for the debtor." The document goes on to say that the debtor selected the respondent to be its counsel based on her expertise and knowledge of the bankruptcy procedures. And so I'm not sure if that was an exaggeration of her experience and expertise or if it's accurate, but it, I think, is perhaps another example of not being quite candid towards the tribunal.
Other than the reporting requirements each year, the conduct that's the subject of the information, did it occur 4 years ago?
Yes, 2013, yes. Pretty much all during the year of 2013.
And has she been practicing in bankruptcy court since that time for a 4-year period?
To my knowledge, yes.
And have there been any problems with her practice in the bankruptcy court for that four-year period?
There have been no open complaints that we're aware of.
So does that impact us as to if we were looking at this matter in 2014 as opposed to 2017, would that be different, that she has in fact practiced for 4 years without additional behavior that has brought her to your attention?
I don't think so, for a couple of reasons. One is it's kind of hard to find these instances of intentional deceptive misconduct. It was only because of a judge took the initiative to report it that we're even here today. Additionally, the respondent practices in state law, and it also goes to what I think they're the deficiencies of the probation plan is that it only looks at her conduct in bankruptcy cases. What really needs to be looked at is the integrity and the veracity of any statements she would make to any court anywhere. She practices in the state courts of this state as well. And for that matter, it is a risk to those courts as well. I see that I'm out of time.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.